To me, what's so exciting is that it's non-invasive and it's working with existing energy to get access to places that we couldn't otherwise get access to deliver medications to places, to open the blood-brain barrier. I mean, it's just a miraculous tool.
Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. Jane Metcalf is an entrepreneur, editor, and the co-chair of the Focus Ultrasound Foundation's Council. The Council is a committed group of goodwill ambassadors that provides advice and assists with raising funds and building awareness of focused ultrasound. She currently serves as the chair of the Human Immunome Project, a global nonprofit whose mission is to build quantitative and predictive models for the human immune system. She's also the founder and CEO of Protolife, a media and events company tracking the radical changes taking place in humans as we harness advanced biological and digital tools to engineer our own biology. She is the co-editor of the book Neolife, 25 Visions for the Future of Our Species, featuring scientists, investors, artists, and science fiction writers on the topic of the neobiological revolution, a phrase she coined to describe the extraordinary discoveries and inventions transforming our bodies, our minds, and our food systems. Prior to Protolife, she was the co-founder and former president of Wired. Welcome to the podcast, Jane.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to be participating today.
And we're so glad to have you here. So we're just going to dive right into the questions. So throughout your career, science, technology, and health have been at the forefront, and you played a major role in the digital revolution of the 1990s. So what initially sparked your interest in these fields?
You know, as a kid growing up, I remember learning about how the sun would die at some point, would burn out, but the universe was expanding. And, I started reading science fiction, and I think all of those things kind of made me a futurist, made me think about the future. And so I've always been sort of passionate about where are we going. I think I'm interested in change. I'm interested in transformation. I'm interested in revolution. Because I just feel like those are such incredibly fruitful and creative times, and that so much opportunity can come out. And I think that technology is inherently progressive, that it allows us to get out of poverty and have access to education, and that transforms us. And that's kind of who we are as a species, too. You know, it's sort of Homo sapiens. You know, we know, but we're also Homo faber, like we make. And I think that knowing and that making is about technology and using that to improve our agriculture and improve our productivity. But to me, the most important thing, of course, is improving ourselves, our health.
And you've been a pioneer in print and online publishing with the creation of Wired. So what do you think set it apart from other technical magazines or other news sources at the time?
Well, I think the other technical publications were really focused on the box. What's in the box? You know, whether it's the hardware or the software, it's like, what's in the box? How are you going to use it? How are you going to deploy this in your company to improve things? And, you know, my partner, Louis Rossetto, who partner in life and the business and, you know, really the visionary behind the editorial strategy, used to say, if Rolling Stone magazine had covered the rock and roll revolution the way the computer magazines are covering the digital revolution, they would have been writing stories about amps and wah-wah pedals. And that was it. And it was like, you know, we are talking about incredibly inspired people who had, first of all, a vision for creating tools for creative people, which was super exciting. They weren't just talking about business productivity. It was like, how can we give an artist and a musician and a teacher and a designer and a filmmaker new tools to do new things? So they were super visionary about what their tools were going to enable. And they were very passionate about deploying those tools to make the world a better place. And honestly, nobody was saying that in the tech publications. And when it came to the news media, you know, they're initial thing was just to be covering it as a business story, like how much money is going to be made and who's doing the IPO and what's the growth, you know, look like. And, you know, for us, it was right off the bat, not a technology magazine. It was about how the technology was going to transform society and transform us. And so that's what set it apart.
Yeah. And one of the other unique aspects of it too is, you know, typically you have the science and tech field over here siloed, and then, you know, you have your liberal arts and your artists.
Well, I think, you know, the nuts and bolts of it is that bottom line, we did have everybody at the leading edge of, you know, computer science and technology reading us, as well as those people in their various industries who were the early adopters of the technology. But it was the optimism and the hipness and the sort of positive environment that we created. It's like, hey, this is going to be cool. It's going to be fun. It's going to be impactful. And why not collectively come together and share a vision for the future that we then help build? And I think that was kind of the underlying message of Wired, which is, you know, let's focus on what could go right. If we focus on what could go wrong, we're pretty much going to drive the ship right into that tree. You know, you focus on what could go right, you're much more likely to drive it in the right direction.
And clearly it worked with, you know, winning a magazine award only 1 year after launching.
Okay, just for the record, we won a lot of awards. We won that award for general excellence. We won it for design. You know, and ultimately, I think one of the coolest awards Wired ever won was Magazine of the Decade. That was pretty cool. But yeah, it was seminal. You know, it was a seminal moment in the magazine world. And one of the last, I hate to say, because, you know, that was sort of the heyday of magazines. And it's just tragic what's happened to magazines today. I hope there's a future for them.
And did that experience inform moving forward and the process of launching ProtoLife and other online publications that you led?
Absolutely. You know, ProtoLife would not exist were it not for Wired. There's no question about that. We were privileged to be at the intersection of, you know, we called it the red hot intersection of, you know, computers and design and networking, you know, as that all kind of multimedia and networking, the internet, the web, all kind of just came together and exploded. So being at the middle of, right in the center of that with access to the leading edge of all of those thinkers and doers was such a privilege and such an opportunity. But to me, that innovation disruption cycle had become a little predictable. And it became less about how to make the world a better place and more about business models, valuations, and, you know, next quarter's revenues. And so I kind of lost interest and moved away. A variety of things brought me back to media, but it was mostly because the next phase of the digital revolution is what I like to call the neobiological revolution, which is when we take our engineering mindset and our digital tools and we apply that to engineering human biology. When I talk about the neobiological revolution, I'm not talking about healthcare per se. I'm talking about radically different ways of thinking about human health and bypassing, in a way, the dysfunction of, you know, the current healthcare system to think to the future. How is technology transforming how we manage human health, how we even understand human health and human flourishing? And how quickly can we go to that place and bypass some of the others? You know, our medical system is very siloed, and each field is a deep and singular approach to medicine. And that works for doctors, and that works for hospitals, and that works probably for insurance companies. Who it doesn't work so much for is patients, right? Because patients are experiencing the effects of their disease, presumably across multiple systems in their body. And so the neobiological revolution is a way of saying, okay, this is a complex system. Your body is a complex system, and it interacts with other complex systems. How can we bring a systems thinking approach to the human body? You know, we used to call it holistic. You know, you can call it functional. You know, because I'm thinking so much about data models these days, that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. and where are the interventions that can be considered within the context of the whole system.
And is that how you heard about focus ultrasound for the first time?
Yes, actually, it was a mutual friend, an incredible scientist, pioneer, inventor. And she said, you have to take a look at this. And, you know, I had known ultrasound as a diagnostic tool. And the idea that it could actually be used as a treatment was a completely novel idea. I hadn't heard of it. And, you know, to me, what's so exciting is that it's, you know, it's non-invasive. And it's working with existing, you know, energy, basically, to get access to places that we couldn't otherwise get access to, you know, to deliver medications to places, to open the blood-brain barrier. I mean, it's just a miraculous tool. And for me, it's all about tools, you know, whether they're digital tools or sound tools or whatever it is. It's like, how quickly can we imagine what we can do with that tool? And then how quickly can we deploy it?
And did it sound too good to be true when you first heard about it? Or did you need to do a lot more investigating on how it works, especially with just the overwhelming number of conditions and diseases it can be applied to? Were you thinking, this sounds too good to be true?
Oh, sure. Yeah. But, you know, as in most really, truly brilliant things, there's something so simple about it and so elegant about it that it struck me as true, you know? And so, I think it's a merging of technology and medicine, but it's also a harnessing of something that's, you know, all around us. And so, you know, I've been amazed at how quickly the progress is being made at, you know, the number of researchers working on it, the breadth of applications that ultrasound can be applied to, you know, and now we're getting to the regulatory approvals and the reimbursement. And, you know, just from a patient standpoint, you know, you might be able to skip chemotherapy altogether, or at least have fewer chemo treatments, you know, there's less surgeries, you know, and sometimes immediate results. I mean, these are things that no doctor says to you, you know, it's like, oh, well, we figured out a way to, you know, expose you to less pain and suffering as we try and fix you, you know? So yeah, it's been really exciting to see the evidence that the Focused Ultrasound Foundation has been able to lay down and to track that progress.
You've been an outspoken advocate of the technology and you serve as co-chair of the Foundation Council. So can you tell us more about your role and what some of your goals are with the council?
I think just building awareness of what focused ultrasound is and how it can be applied. I want this to be something that patients know to ask for, that doctors know, you know, to offer. I want it to not be medicine's best kept secret. I like to explain it to all of my friends. It's like, oh, glioblastoma, you should ask your doctor about focused ultrasound. Epilepsy or central tremor or Parkinson's disease, ask your doctor about focused ultrasound. You know, prostate cancer is one of the ones where we've had great luck. Uterine fibroids, you know, even pancreatic cancer. It's a very difficult to reach place. Can we get there with focused ultrasound? And I think the Focused Ultrasound Foundation is in a unique position for generating that awareness, encouraging people, you know, to ask their doctor, you know, would this work for me? And then, you know, to help build the network of donors and supporters that can accelerate the research, accelerate the approvals, and of course, accelerate the reimbursement to the patient. So, yeah, I would really like to see the foundation continue to do its great work. And it feels like we're at a tipping point, you know, just in the last couple of years, you know, the just number of, you know, CNN and CBS and, you know, the media coverage, the awareness, the opportunities, the approvals, the reimbursements. I just, you know, having watched it for a few years, but knowing a little more of the history, things are accelerating right now. And so, you know, once that starts to happen, you just want to pour on more resources to just amplify the message.
Right. It's definitely been exciting to see it become more of a mainstream technology that people are learning about. And in your opinion, what do you think are the most significant challenges facing the adoption of new technologies like focus ultrasound?
You know, I think it is just lack of awareness is probably the one of the single biggest issues. You know, doctors aren't told how to, they're not taught and trained in the use of ultrasound in medical school. And that right there is a huge hurdle. The ultrasound equipment isn't distributed throughout a hospital. You know, it tends to be localized in one place. That's another issue. But I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges is, frankly, you know, economic and structural, in that there's just not a lot of money to be made in using these types of treatments as opposed to what doctors are currently doing. And, you know, to the extent that that's the way things work, you know, we're disruptive to that. And so I think it takes patient advocacy groups. I think it takes major donors. I think it takes media awareness, you know, to try to stem that. You know, I look at the $4 trillion that we're spending on healthcare, at rising interest rates and declining results for that investment. As a smaller or medium income company, you know, your healthcare expense is enormous. And so finding disruptive ways to cut through the process, I think is a huge opportunity. So that's really what we need to be focused on, is how can we get focused on solutions as opposed to financial models?
Well, it's been fantastic speaking with you, and we're so grateful for your leadership at the foundation and your advocacy. So where can listeners keep up with you?
Oh, well, thank you, Allison. It's been such an honor to be a part of this organization. I'm so impressed with the leadership, and I'm impressed with the vision. It's been great to meet all of the researchers that I've had the opportunity to meet so far. You know, I do have this newsletter publication called ProtoLife. You can find it at www.proto.life. I will be posting more stuff on LinkedIn going forward. So those are probably the two best places to find me.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so amazing talking to you. This has been such an important conversation, and we're so grateful for all the work that you're doing with the foundation.
Oh, well, thank you, Allison. I'm just so proud to be involved. It really is an honor.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.